From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fourth day of March 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk with Daryl Good, ag economist from the University of Illinois, about the marketplace and hear again the interview we did with Gary Schnitke Friday afternoon during Commodity Week about crop insurance and decisions farmers will be making through the middle of this month. And it all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Well, no numbers for you this afternoon from the CME Group or the Kansas City Board of Trade as I'm out hosting an event. If you're not at the event, you can always catch up with us later this week. On Wednesday, I'll be in Lincoln, Illinois at the Logan County Fairgrounds, the Extension Building there, along with Gary Schnitke and Pete Manhart and Jackie Vakes for our Ag Outlook panel. That one starts at 7 o'clock in the evening, March the 6th. It's a Wednesday in Lincoln, Illinois. Sponsor is Logan County Farm Bureau. And the Farm Credit Services will host a show for us in Jacksonville at Hamilton's. That's at 110 Northeast Street. That's Hamilton's, 110 Northeast Street, on Thursday of this week. Registration for that event opens at 6 o'clock. You do not have to be pre-registered, but registration opens at 6. There's a dinner at 6:30. And then at 7 o'clock, I'll host a panel along with Gary Schnitke and Jackie Vakes again. And this time around, Matt Bennett and Mike Zuzulo will join us. That's at Hamilton's in Jacksonville on Thursday evening. The sponsor for the event is Farm Credit Services. On the 11th of March next week, we'll be right here in Champaign County at the Farm Bureau Building. Dave Dickey will host that program. Has not released the names of who will be along with him, but I'll bet it'll be another good program. That's at the Champaign County Farm Bureau Building, 7 o'clock on Monday, March the 11th. And then on Wednesday the 13th, up at Celebrations in LaSalle, Illinois, Dave will be there along with Jackie Vakes and Mike Zuzulo and Kurt Kimmel. That's in LaSalle at 6 o'clock on March the 13th. Jackie Vakes, Mike Zuzulo, Kurt Kimmel, and Dave Dickey will be at Celebrations. It's all part of the programming here that goes along with what's happening on our radio station. You can find it all at WILLAG.org.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Just a couple of quick notes about tomorrow's event, the All-Day Agricultural Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The doors open at 7:45 a.m. Central Time. That's 8:45 a.m. in the Eastern Time Zone there at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. It's just off Exit 4 on Interstate 74 on the Indiana side of the Illinois-Indiana border. That's at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana for the All-Day Agricultural Outlook program. The doors open at 7:45 a.m. Central, 8:45 a.m. in the Eastern Time Zone. You must have a ticket to make your entrance into the program.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Here's what the extended weather forecast is calling for in the Urbana-Champaign area later this week on Wednesday. We should see partly sunny skies and a high near 34 degrees. Wednesday evening, partly cloudy and a low of 23. On Thursday, sunny skies and 41. Thursday night, partly cloudy and 27. And on Friday of this week, mostly sunny skies as we head towards the weekend. A beautiful 48 degrees. Friday evening, mostly cloudy and 34. And then Saturday, mostly cloudy and a high near 48 again. That's the extended forecast. We'll take a more complete look at the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll hear from meteorologist Ed Keezer.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined by ag economist Darrell Good. 5 years ago, he and colleague Scott Irwin penned some articles projecting a new price plateau for commodities, corn, soybeans, and wheat. In the past week, on the FarmDoc Daily website, they've written two new articles exploring how well the projections have panned out and whether or not they need to be adjusted. Darrell, please take us through the articles. I believe the projections, roughly speaking, doubled the price of commodities.
When we looked at the apparent structural change that started in late 2006, early 2007, really tied to the ethanol boom, we suggested that this was not a spike in prices, but a move to a new higher level for a longer period of time, recognizing that the previous era of prices had lasted something over 30 years. So didn't really try to define how long the new era would last, but trying to get some handle on what might be the average price and distribution of prices in this new era. And for corn, when we looked at Illinois prices, a monthly average, we suggested we might be at in the range of 460 as an average, 1058 for soybeans, and about 580 for wheat in the new era, however long that lasted. So we took look back and said, if we started December 2006 and looked at prices through December 2012, the average price in Illinois for corn was $4.74. For soybeans, I think $11.11, and for wheat, $5.88. So the averages were fairly close to what we projected, a little higher than projected for soybeans. The distribution wasn't exactly like we forecast, but close. And we did see some very extreme prices during the past 5 years, and that's what previous history would suggest, that you would see a very wide variation around the average. So after looking at that, then we raised the question, is there any evidence that we should change our expectations in this new era as it goes forward? And for corn and wheat, we decided no, that 460, 580 corn and wheat was about the right expectation. But soybeans, maybe we were a little too conservative. We had forecast soybean prices as a ratio to corn, 2.3 to 1, and I guess the evidence the past 5 years would suggest maybe a higher ratio would be a better expectation. So we would think maybe a 2.4 to 1 ratio, and saying, you know, just a shade over $11 would be maybe a more realistic expectation of an average moving forward on soybeans.
These are cash prices and not December and November futures and July futures for wheat, right?
Right. They are average monthly cash prices at the farm level.
Given all of that, so then you took all of that and said, well, what does it mean in the coming years? And in particular, for this year, when you look forward, what does it mean for producers facing very high prices because of the drought last year, that the old crop simply is in short supply? And how do things change as the 2013 season progresses?
Right. One of the important characteristics of prices is not only the average, but how might you expect the prices to vary around that average, and what percentage of the time might you expect prices to be at different levels? And so we looked at that distribution. And, you know, for soybeans, you say, you know, maybe about 15% of the time you'd be above $13. And the same on corn, you know, about 15% of the time you'd be above $6. And then we took a look at where prices are right now, old crop and new crop bids, and say, where do those prices fall within that expected distribution in the new era? And what you find, obviously, is old crop prices are still in the upper tail of the expected distribution as we still work through the effects of last year's drought. Even new crop prices, while lower than old crop prices, are probably near the upper end of the middle range of expected prices. So again, new crop bids, while they have come down, they're lower than old crop bids, are still high relative to what you might expect the average to be moving forward.
Last week at the United States Department of Agriculture Ag Forum, they did some calculations on what prices might look like under low yield, normal yield, and high yield expectations. And surprisingly enough, even under the low yield expectations, prices for corn dropped sharply for new crop.
A return to a more normal harvested acres of corn and a much better than yield than we had in 2012, even if it is comes in below trend, would still give us a very large crop for the 2013 marketing year and would be expected to result in lower prices, certainly than what we've experienced this year and maybe even for the 2011 crop year. So I know there is ongoing concern about yield potential for 2013, but I think unless those yields are really very low relative to trend, that it's going to be difficult for prices to get back to the level we've been experiencing this year.
So producers are facing a problem at this point, at least one potentially pretty good size problem, because they have been scared, I think, as you might suggest, to make any marketing positions at this point other than crop insurance, because in the past few years, this has not been the right thing to do.
Right. I think particularly last year, early sales turned out to be sales at relatively low prices because of the drought that was not well forecast. So I think there has been some reluctance to say, well, it's been remained dry, particularly in the Western Corn Belt and the Plain States. I'm not sure I want to make the same mistake as I made last year. I'm going to postpone new crop sales until we get closer to the spring time period. But during that period, as you suggest, prices have come down, and new crop corn prices have come down a dollar since late last fall, early winter. And so those opportunities have eroded pretty fast. But 2 points. One, we're still at relatively high prices. Over $5 for new crop corn is still high relative to long-term expectations. And now that we do have the crop revenue projected prices for 2013, there is some floor in revenue for those that will use the revenue products. So now that we have that price protection in place, assuming we're taking insurance, and the market is at or below those insured prices, then it says there's not a huge incentive to be real aggressive on new crop pricing at this point, and would still be focused on kind of that portion of the crop that's uninsured, if you will, saying most revenue products are 80 to 85% of expected production, and so there is still some market risk for uninsured bushels, and it's really those bushels you think I need to look for opportunities to get those priced. You know, 15, 20, 25% of expected production is what I'm shooting for at this point.
Corn and soybeans both?
I think both, yes. The insurance prices are in place. The market price right now is a bit below the insured price. And so you say, I've got good put option in place, if you will, if I'm taking crop revenue insurance. And it's just those uninsured bushels that I'm at risk, and those are the ones I need to concentrate on.
And for wheat?
For wheat, you know, a bit different. We don't see as much use of the insurance program on wheat. The insurance price is quite high on wheat, above current prices. So for those that do take insurance, there's not as much need to be worried about pricing the crop because the revenue floor is quite high. But for those that don't, and for the most part, we have crops that are in very good shape so that there may be less than normal risk in forward pricing. I think there's still marginal opportunity for forward pricing. Current harvest bids are a bit higher than what I think we will average during the harvest period. So I think, again, like corn and soybeans, prices have eroded somewhat, but still the bids are above the average that I expect for the new crop.
Thank you, Darrell.
Okay, Todd.
Darrell Good is an ag economist at the University of Illinois. You can find the articles he and colleague Scott Irwin penned for the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by Justin Wood, Paul Stevens, Tim Smith, Scott Harms, and Mark Soderberg of Archer Financial Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm. You can learn more about the services they offer at 800-637-3123.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason out of the office emceeing the Illinois Soybean Summit in Normal today. On Friday, we recorded in the afternoon Commodity Week with our special guest, Gary Schnittke, in studio with us, Wayne Nelson and Matt Bennett, along with Bill Mayer. The four of us were asking Gary, of course, questions about crop insurance. I began that process and wanted to know how we made it through the month of February and what the numbers finished up like for crop insurance.
Yeah, yes, Todd. We looked at projected prices for corn at $5.65 and $12.87 for soybeans. That's a bit of a disappointment from the beginning of the month, but overall about the same as last year. Our 2012 projected price was $5.68, and this year we're looking at $5.65, so almost identical on corn, a little bit higher on soybeans. So we can use crop insurance to get roughly the same coverage levels or protection per acre that we did have last year. As far as recommendations, we've seen most people take revenue protection policies at 75, 80, and 85% coverage levels. That was a good policy to have last year, and it will be, in my opinion, a good policy to keep for 2013. And if anything, I would be in the 80 to 85% coverage levels on RP. The other policy that I would think about is DRIP with the harvest revenue option at the 90% coverage level. And I kind of like that policy if you're, in particular, if you're concerned with price declines. That additional 5% over that 85% adds some significant price protection. But for most producers, it comes down between RP and GRIP HR, and 80-85% on RP and 90% coverage level on GRIP.
Yeah, Gary, if you're looking at this and talking to a producer about selecting his crop insurance, how much do you discuss with him, I guess, the way that it changes his marketing plan and maybe the way that it opens up his marketing plan through different strategies? And, you know, what we've tried to talk to guys about, even though we don't sell crop insurance in my office, is that, you know, paying a little bit more maybe for a harvest price option situation can give you a little more flexibility. Is that a discussion that you like to have with producers as well?
That's an absolutely correct discussion to have, because that harvest price option is designed to give flexibility for farmers in marketing. And last year, you know, if you did some pre-harvest hedging last year in May, you could have had some hedging losses. Crop insurance with the harvest price option, that RP policy, well, you probably didn't think about that hedging turned out well. At least crop insurance came in and made up for some of those losses there. But that RP and GRIP HR is definitely for those situations. And I guess last August, when we had some pretty high prices, a lot of people did have the confidence to go out and price some things, given that they had RP and that harvest price option.
When you're looking at the GRIP as compared to the RP from a marketing standpoint, Gary, does a farmer have to be concerned with the county product as far as making sales ahead, or is it just strictly, I guess the way we've always looked at it, that you know, how his yields correlate with the county, not necessarily whether they're above or below, but if they go up when the county goes up, if they go down when the county goes down. Would you agree with that? Or
I would agree with that. Correlation with the county yields is what you're looking for with GRIP. When we look at farms in central Illinois in particular, there's usually a pretty high correlation between the county and the farm. In particular, for farms that have about the similar type quality land that's in the county, and we actually do in central Illinois at least see most of those correlations being pretty high. I mean, if you have GRIP HR, you can have confidence to market ahead.
Gary, the one thing that we always like to think about is if they're using the GRIP policy, is to think of using a hail policy along with it, because you can get hailed out without being in a small area where you can't, the whole county doesn't get affected. What do you think about that?
That is a good thing to do, is take that hail policy. And, you know, if you do take that grip policy, you have to be aware that you are taking a bit of a risk that something bad will happen to your farm, whereas it doesn't happen to the county. And another thing about the grip policies is that they don't have preventive planting or replant payments in there. So if that preventive planting option is a big concern to you, don't take grip, but go to one of the combo products and RP.
Gary, can you go through the difference in the prices of Grip HR and the RP products? Because there's a big difference in those two products.
Yeah, Grip, all right, so you're talking about the premium.
Premium price, correct.
Premium price. And let me just give you a example here for RP. 80 and 85% coverage levels, enterprise unit, that policy is going to run in Central Illinois somewhere between $10 and $12 per acre for an 80% coverage level. 85 will be 20 to, you know, mid-20s, 20 to 25. The grip policy at the 90% coverage level is going to be in the $50 range if you take the highest protection level. You can lower that protection level and get those cost of those premiums down into the low 30s if you go low on the protection level. Obviously, grip is a higher cost product, but you also have to keep in mind that it has that 90% coverage level, and it did make some pretty large payments in the drought year last year. So,
if I remember correctly, your recommendation is not to drop down the coverage level of grip to below 90% if you're compared to 85% for RP, right?
That's right. If I was taking grips, I would take the 90% coverage level. And if you want to lower the premium cost, you lower the protection level from 100%, and you can select anywhere between 100% to 60%. And if you take the 60% protection level, you'll pay 60% of the premium, but when it does pay, you'll get only 60% of the maximum payment as well. So that's how I would adjust the premium cost on the grip policy.
Gary, we were talking a little bit earlier about our marketing plans as far as if you're taking 85% RP and maybe marketing 15% of that. How do you look at that, and what's your recommendation for the producers?
I would leave that more up to you guys, but marketing 15% of your crop right now doesn't seem like a bad strategy to me. And you know, the one good thing about RP is if you do take a RP, you can market up to your coverage level and be assured that of some sort of base guarantee there. I wouldn't recommend marketing that high, but starting out, you know, in the 15% range right now, is you're going to have to price it sometime. And, you know, if we do have a big crop, this will be likely some of your higher prices you see during the year.
Gary, one thing you talked about, preventive planting, some of the hail policies do let you buy a preventive planting with it, so that's a thought if that's one of your big concerns.
That is true, and you know, that hail policy with that preventive planting on grip, additional policy would get around that concern of preventive planting.
That's Gary Schnitke, Farm Management Specialist from the University of Illinois, recorded Friday afternoon during our Commodity Week program, along with Gary in studio with us, Matt Bennett of TGM, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
It's National Pound Cake Day. The pound cake originated several centuries ago in England. The name comes from the fact that the original pound cakes contained 1 pound each of butter, sugar, eggs, and flour. By the mid-1800s, the recipe began to deviate slightly from the original formula to make a lighter cake. But it was not until the 20th century that baking powder and soda were added. On this day in agricultural history in 1634, Samuel Cole supposedly opened the first tavern in the U.S. in Boston. Sam Cole's Inn was surrounded by spacious grounds, which commanded a view of the Boston Harbor and its shipping. Later, he purchased a residence next to the Hancock Tavern, where historians believe plans for the Boston Tea Party were discussed. In 1792, Samuel Slocum was born. He invented a machine to make pins with solid heads and a machine for sticking the pins in a paper holder for sale. His machine was patented in 1841. A sliding hopper deposited a number of pins in grooves in a plate from where a row of wires pushed them into a folded paper. The machine was activated by a foot treadle. In 1792, Kona oranges were introduced to Hawaii by Captain George Vancouver. The Kona had a sweet acid balance reminiscent of the pineapple. Sailors planted citrus trees along trade routes to prevent scurvy. And in 1927, Ira Remsen died, an American chemist. He was co-discoverer with Constantine Fahlberg of saccharin, the artificial sweetener. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Monday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, not live, but out of the office this afternoon. I'm hosting an event at the ISU campus in Normal, the Illinois Soybean Summit. Rather than take you through the weather forecast for the United States, I thought it'd be a good idea to let you listen to what Ed Kieser has to say about the Southern Hemisphere as it was reported during our Commodity Week program. Now here's meteorologist Ed Kieser.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look at the weather for corn and soybean production in South America. Rain is finally falling on some of the driest southern production areas of Argentina, ending a roughly two-month dry spell. Rainfall of 3/4 of an inch to 1.5 inches is likely across La Pampa, Buenos Aires, and neighboring Cordoba, Santa Fe, and Entre Rios through Saturday, with some locally heavier amounts quite possible. This rain will end a decline in crop conditions, but it should be noted that late planting followed by the extended dry period has already caused some soybean yield losses. At least temperatures this year have not been excessively hot compared to the drought year last year, so prospects are for a better crop this year compared to last. Beyond this rainfall, a stretch of dry and unseasonably cool weather is expected Sunday through the middle of next week. Then warmer weather and scattered thunderstorms will likely follow later in the week. Overall, some improvement in crop conditions in key production areas of Argentina is expected. The system bringing rain to Argentina will push northward into South Brazil and Paraguay with rain late in the week and into early next week. That will temporarily slow harvesting and second crop planting, but amounts are not likely to be heavy enough to cause long-lasting delays. This area has generally received enough rainfall in recent weeks to benefit crops. Across center-west and southeast Brazil and Bahia, a mostly dry weather pattern of late has allowed for rapid soybean harvesting and second crop corn planting. However, soil moisture deficits are growing, especially to the east across Goiás, Minas Gerais, São Paulo, and Bahia. That is of concern for second crop corn development. A few scattered showers and thunderstorms should return during the middle of next week, but most locations will likely receive less than an inch of rainfall in the coming week. That is your South American weather update. I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser.
And I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. That does wrap up this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. Remember, we'll be at the All-Day Agricultural Outlook meeting over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, tomorrow on Tuesday. Please do join us if you have a ticket. We'll open the doors at 7:45 a.m. Central Time. That's 8:45 a.m. in the Eastern Time Zone at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. And if you can't make it there, no worries. We have a series of meetings coming up in the next week, including Wednesday evening in Lincoln, Thursday evening in Jacksonville, next Monday right here in Champaign County, and then next Wednesday at Celebrations up in LaSalle County, Illinois. It's all part of the service from WILL. You can find those meetings and all the details on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. By the way, if you can't hear us on the radio station or get us on the web, then maybe you should just dial this number, 217-333-3463. 3434. That's 217-333-3434. We update it at 10:15 and 3:15 with analysis of the commodity markets each and every business day of the year.